This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Glad to be here with you. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. Max Power with us this morning. You're with us in lots of different ways this morning, whether you're listening to us over the air, watching our video stream, or catching us on the Odyssey app. We appreciate you each and every way you take us in. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app, or you can comment on our video streams or directly to us on social media. Facebook, YouTube, X, we're there. And of course, thank you for watching us on 12 News Connected. Again, it's a busy time of the year, a lot to get to. NBA playoffs continue. One game last night to deliver an exciting ending, the other. A little revenge game for the team closest to us with Oklahoma City. In the NHL, one of Max and I's teams win and one does not. Max, I don't know what our panic meter needs to be on the game ones there in hockey, but we've got money on the line here, so we might touch on that. Shockers add a huge recruit, I think. I say huge. Relatively speaking, though, it feels like another big one. They've landed a couple that make a ton of sense, if nothing else. We'll talk about that. And Portal Paul and the work he's done, which is now, I think, nearing completion just by available spots on the roster. So we can take a deeper look at that. And Tommy, the Royals, 13 out of 15 now. Winners again last night.
14 out of 16 after last night.
In those, I don't know what it is in 16 because I saw the stat for 13 out of 15. 32 runs allowed in 15 games for this pitching staff right now. It's just been remarkable. Michael Wacha was really good again last night. Lucas Cersic was really good again last night. Carlos Estevez was not really good last night, but he got the job done, which is fine for a closer. A lot of closers don't get the job done on their off nights. That was clearly an off night, and they just are, I mean, they're pitching their tails off right now, and this has been one of the hotter of a team that's been streaky for a while and a team that was, I think, streaky in its last great run that it had. This may be the biggest heater. I'd have to really go back and look at that, but I don't remember a stretch of 13 out of 15 games. Man, that's crazy. The way that they're winning right now, and they're keeping pace in a good division, and they're taking care of the schedule, which is what we've said a billion times they'll need to do this year, because they're playing in a good division and you got to win these, you know, you got to win these winnables, and that's what they're doing. And they try to sweep the series now with some day baseball today. So it's a good time to be a Royals fan. It's a good time to be a sports fan, because we got all kinds of stuff for you. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, happy Thursday. Good to see you. You laid it all out there. There's a lot going on. Really, really busy right now. And, you know, I think the only caveat with the Royals last night, if you can think of one, is the fact that both the Tigers and the Guardians won as well. Guardians won a little bit earlier in the day. The Tigers were in a battle with the Rockies. But if you're going to go up against Colorado, more than likely you're going to beat them. And ultimately, the Tigers were able to do that. So you say the Royals keep pace. That's true. You know, eventually you'd love to see the teams in front of them drop a couple, you know, here and there. But, you know, still, they've got an opportunity for a sweep today against the White Sox. A four-game home sweep would be phenomenal. You know, against a team like the White Sox. So looking forward to it, and, you know, looking forward to jumping right in.
Yeah, we can, well, because we'll dig into the game when we have a little more time. This first segment off the top, let's start with what you just talked about in the division. So the Royals, if you just go to the last 10, which, like, when you're looking at the standings, they're, you know, they've won 8 of the last 10. Detroit, Cleveland will have 7 of their last 10. Minnesota, 6 of their last 10. I think that the Twins are not as bad as they started. They have a positive run differential. Like, in all of this, they're 3 games under 500, but they've got a positive. They've got a better run differential than the Royals. And that doesn't mean everything, but it's usually a pretty good indicator of what's going on for teams. And, oh, by the way, speaking of that number, Detroit is the best run differential in baseball, Tommy. Cleveland appears to be, you know, a really good offensive team that is struggling to pitch. I don't know if that's going to hold through. They haven't pitched well at all this year. Detroit's been one of the best offensive teams, and believe it or not, they've actually pitched just a tick better than the Royals have thus far this year. Now, not on a per-game basis. I'm just looking at the overall. But Detroit is, I mean, we thought they'd be good, right? We thought they'd grow from last year, and it was for real. I don't know if I thought they'd be this good. Like, they're insane right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it helps when you've got Tarek Skubal anchoring that rotation, and they've got really, really good young pitching behind him. And then, you know, I think one thing that people forget about quite a bit is who their manager is. I mean, it's A.J. Hinch, and, you know, he's got championship pedigree from his time with Houston for sure, and I wasn't sure we'd ever see him doing it again. And even at this level, you know, taking over a Detroit team that you know, I think is historically underperformed and underdelivered. And, you know, that was a you know, looks to be a really great hire for them. They've come into their own, you know, towards the end of last year for sure, and especially this season so far. We'll see if they can maintain that. But at least right now, they're not really showing any signs of weakness.
Yeah. And I think had we not seen what they did last year, I'd be more prone to be like, yeah, I don't know how real this is. But it was real for at least half of a season, you know, at least half of a season a year ago, and they just kind of picked up right where they left off. I think it is for real. I think that they're very good. I'm still trying to learn a lot of their players, honestly. Like, I know, you know, they've got a lot of great young players, and you just – those series this year, and I think the next one comes pretty quick between the Royals and Tigers – are going to be a lot of fun, I think. And the next one comes in late May. So we end the month with a 3-game set with Detroit there to end this month. But it'll be fun to watch it. It'll be fun to watch both of these young teams do what they do and see. Cleveland, I'm never going to count out because Cleveland's always there. But the division, think back, I know we've said this before, but think back 4 years ago. Who'd have ever thought the AL Central would be the kind of juggernaut that's probably the best division in baseball? NL West, AL Central. You know, no disrespect to any other division, because there's some good ones. Like, it's as good. It's at least as good as any. So we'll get more into the Royals as we go along. We'll get more into the Shockers. It's a fun day. Look, Tommy, I'm excited about Shocker basketball. I got to tell you. And we've been very honest about the happenings. I'm feeling it with on paper against on paper, and it's May, who knows, but on paper in May, I feel pretty good about it. I like this group and the way it looks. Maybe I'm crazy, but it seems good to me.
Are you able to articulate why?
Yeah, because yes, I am. I don't know if I can do it in like 30 seconds. Well, yeah.
I'll tell you. Because I can sum mine up pretty quickly. Yeah, sure. I mean, again, on paper, yeah, great. Like, we know what these guys have done at their previous stops and all of that. I have no idea how they're going to gel together, how it's going to work, all of that. And so, like, you know, sure, like, it's great that they've been able to go and fill the spots that they filled because they absolutely had to basically rebuild from the ground up. And so that's something that, yeah, you can give Paul Mills a significant amount of credit for being able to go and, you know, find guys that at least on paper look like, you know, that they can be game changers and difference makers for this team. No idea if that's actually going to go through to fruition.
Expectations are impossible. I don't know what to expect out of KU. I know that on paper it looks pretty good, but we'll let's dig into that. We'll start there. We'll start with the Shockers. Portal Paul's been doing some work. Let's go there. Jason, we see your comment on the Royals. We'll get to that later in the hour, but we'll go a little Shockers here as they make a late addition yesterday that seems to fit. That's next on Sports Daily.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you on this Thursday. A lot to get to today. We want to start with the Shockers, though. because they made an addition yesterday to kind of round things out, we think. Taylor Eldridge says that it likely finalizes their roster pending this house settlement that's out there. But if we look at Mike Gray Jr., Tommy, well, first, let's do this first. We saw what they did with Fresno State player, right? If with everything we've seen on paper, I said to you, you know, yesterday morning, what do you think the Shockers must still and need to still add to this roster for it to be complete? What would you say?
I mean, for sure, ball handling, for sure. Somebody that can, you know, be that guy. Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's what they add, which so A, that shouldn't surprise us, but B, they go get one that makes sense from Nichols. You know, Michael Gray Jr. Did Nichols make the tourney last year? I think they might have. No, they didn't, but they have in years past. So whatever. They've been a decent program. You go get a guy who last year in his junior year took a step forward in his career in sort of a big way. 11 points. He didn't have a lot of assists. So that's where it gets a little interesting because Taylor Eldridge calls him, and I'll trust Taylor on this stuff because he follows it closer, a scoring-oriented point guard. But a point guard, but you know, so it's not like he's a distributor, but he scored 11 points a game. And again, Tommy, here we go with this. Last year, he shot better than 40% from three. And that's not just on a handful, right? He was taking about five threes a game, a little more than five threes a game. So he can shoot from the outside, he can score. And it fills a, you know, a role on the roster that we were still sort of waiting for. I think it, again, all of this is on paper, but I, as we look at this thing as a whole, and Portal Paul, as he famously called himself, I think has done a good job. I think if we took this class and we, you know, we took away like the disappointment of losing Washington and Ballard, which make no mistake was very disappointing. And you just look at like, okay, here are the pieces. Here's what they've done. The fit seems to be there. They checked a lot of boxes. It's going to be a defense first team, most likely based on the, you know, the early movement there. I like the look of it and what they've done with it. And as far as like, we're guessing, we're guessing with everybody. Like we're guessing with KU, what's Darren Peterson going to look like? What's Flory Badunga look like in a, you know, expanded role? And then it's a bunch of questions for K. So we're guessing with everybody. There's not a lot of teams this year in college basketball that return much because of the wildness of the portal. So as we're just having to guess as much as we are, I like this right now for the Shockers. I think it looks fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that he checked the boxes and did what they needed to do to rebuild that roster. I've thought for quite a while, and I think I've even said this on the show a couple of times, that I didn't think that either one of the guys that they had on the roster that were potentially going to be point guards were going to be the point guards, or at least should be the point guards. And maybe Keandre Kendall, the Barton transfer, you know, can show that, you know, he's worthy of a bunch of playing time and all of that. I don't know. But, you know, both Kendall and the other, Kenyon Giles, both those guys don't provide a significant amount of height. They're both pretty short, pretty small, and that can work for sure. But, you know, Giles is 5'9", you know, coming out of UNC Greensboro, was effective there. And who knows, like that maybe will work. You know, Kendall is 6 foot. They needed some size in the backcourt. They got that with Amunike, the Fresno State transfer that we talked about earlier this week on the show, and then they get it with Gray, who is 6'2". So they get a little bit of size in the backcourt, which I do think is important. And, you know, so again,
if you're going to be a defense first team.
And absolutely. And that's going to be the identity of the team. Anytime, you know, you're like, okay, well, you know, these guys, you know, shot well from three and they're, you know, a score first type guard. Okay. Like that's great, but that's clearly not going to be the identity of this team. And so being able to have a little bit more length, you know, see if they can have that defensive prowess from both the front court and the back court. That's what I'm going to be looking for going into this season. And they did add some pieces from a defensive point of view that absolutely should be able to improve where they've been in that regard. You know, guys like Caron Boyd, who was the conference defensive player of the year last season when he was at East Tennessee State. Jarrett Valencia, who grades out as a big-time defender, and he came over from Monmouth. So, I mean, they do have some pieces there that can absolutely help them defend. That's what I'm going to be looking for going into next season.
Yeah, when we don't know so much about the players, that's what I mean. I think that's all we can reasonably do is like, okay, what do we think this looks like next year? I think we agree. It looks like a team that's going to emphasize defense big time. And I'm good with that because I think that always raises your floor. But then, you know, for a while when we were looking at this, we're like, yeah, that looks good, but boy, they sure look like they're going to be offensively deficient at this point, right? Like, and that's okay. Like, you get ugly, you do those things. I'd rather be that than the alternative, a team that can't play any defense. But that's what makes me like these last two so much is I don't know what a starting lineup looks like. I don't know any of that stuff. Who's going to, you know, is there any distributor on the team? I don't know any of that. But what I do know is they needed guys that could score. They needed guys that could shoot. And they got a couple of guys who have done that. One of them in the Mountain West. So it's not, you know, there's not like a massive step up in competition there. Like you do it in the Mountain West. Mountain West was better league last year. And the other comes from a program that we pretty consistently see playing tournament basketball and Nichols. And so I like it. I think it all makes sense. How about that? Like it all makes sense together. I also like, and maybe I like this even more. And we talked to Kevin Saul yesterday and you know, I tried to ask as best as you can ask, like you asked for a million, you know, how's that going? And of course they're not going to, you know, they're not going to tell us exactly how much money they've raised. At least I don't think they would. I should ask, but what was the term he used? 500 times better than what he inherited, which was almost nothing. So I think the other thing that you take from the class, if you're a Shocker fan, is those efforts are paying off at least a little bit. There's no way that the last two guys, Emenike and Gray, were not coveted in the portal, at least by comparable schools to Wichita State. There's no way two guys who can shoot the three that way, as much as that's valued now in college basketball, were not, you know, I'm not saying they beat Kentucky for these recruits, but I think it's likely that they beat some teams for these guys. And that's, I think, a good sign for Wichita State and the place they have to start. Like they have to win these battles for these players in this range if they're ever going to get to adding players in the next range, which is where we all probably want them to be. But in the short term, as you lose players like Washington and Ballard and you got to take that sting, being able to compete for the level of players that they were able to in the portal, I think is a good sign for the program. Now, of course, all the pressure is on Paul Mills and can you coach these guys up? Now, can you make what looks like a good roster on paper? I don't think there's anybody who follows Shocker basketball and follows this stuff at least moderately closely would tell you, yeah, I don't like the way that those pieces fit. I think everybody's generally pleased with it. Now you got to go turn it into wins.
Well, nobody knows. I mean, you have no idea. Like, it, you know, moderately right. pleased, sure. Like, I mean, every slot on the team right now, it looks like is filled. I think the only way that you would be like not moderately pleased with the roster would be if they had open scholarship positions and they weren't able to get anybody. I think
there could have been additions where we were like.
Like who and from where? Like what are we talking about here? Like you know somebody coming from like a D2, like a D2 school, or like it doesn't have to be players.
I'm not trying to take anything away from players, so it's really hard. But like players that didn't produce at their prior stop and are just players.
There are a couple of guys that are.
There
additions
are in this
that
group, there are, and
didn't
I'm
produce
I'm
at their
not
previous
to,
school.
Like I'm trying not to go after these guys specifically, but there are. But if it was only that, right? Like if it was only that, I would be a little leery, right? I'm gonna give you another example. So last year, and this is where it's like you have two different things happening. So last year for K-State, on paper, and the way that they attacked the portal, right? I don't want to speak for anybody else. I felt great about it. I was like, man, this tells me that K-State is a player in this world, right? In this portal world. The problem is it didn't translate over to wins. Not enough anyway. So you have two different things. And you wouldn't call, I wouldn't call last year a success, but I would say that as that was being put together, it gave us a good indicator of where the program stood sort of in this NIL world. And that was in a good place, right? K-State was able to go and get a lot of high-level players. You knew they were spending money, resources. The players were committing to come play for Coach Tang. Like, all those things were good. Then you had the season started, didn't play out well. They didn't have a good enough season. It was a disappointment. So it's like there's two different things. So in that first thing, for the Shockers this year, I like what they've been able to do. I like the caliber of player they've brought in. And I think at least against their peers in the American, it's a good sign that they've been able to bring in players of that caliber. Now, of course, the much more important piece, we're not going to know until next fall. And that's how this team plays, right? I think I'm trying to look at it two different ways, because otherwise, like, we're just like, we really don't know anything until the fall. But I do think it's important for a program that had nothing in the NIL space not that long ago. I think it is important to take a look at what they're able to do and how that moves forward, because they'll never be able to get back to where they were if they're not bigger players in the portal. And I think as far as like progress of what kind of player they are in the portal, this class tells me they're continuing to make progress there. If that makes any sense.
No, yeah, I mean, it kind of does. I mean, I think that what makes it a more difficult exercise is that we don't know what each one of these players commanded in this space. We don't know, right. And you know, until, and who knows if this will ever happen or not, but until there is kind of an open marketplace for that sort of thing, and like transparency and visibility from the top down everywhere in college athletics, where you know, like, there are contract negotiations and this player is looking for this on the open market and they're, you know, commanding this amount of NIL dollars and revenue sharing and all of that, then we don't know. We can guess. We can guess and say, all right, the guy that they landed yesterday from Nichols that, you know, averaged over 11 points a game, whatever, it was probably fairly coveted by other teams, and we think maybe he commanded X amount of dollars from Wichita State, but we don't know that for sure. You know, you talked to yesterday, and I don't disagree with you, about how Brian Amunike from Fresno State that signed with Wichita State, you think is probably a guy that would be coveted in the transfer portal, and that teams would want his skill set. I don't disagree with you, but we don't know that for sure. So we can guess and say that, yeah, you know, Wichita State's probably a player in this market now, and they're able to win some of these recruiting battles and all of that. Clearly, they've won the battles because they've landed the players, but we don't know what happened behind the scenes. We have no idea, you know, if these other players were highly pursued by other programs or not. We can guess at it. We can, you know, make an educated guess that, you know, with what they do and how they have performed at their previous stop, that they probably were. But again, we don't know that for sure. So I'm not trying to like throw water on this at all, because yeah, on paper it looks really good, and the fact that they've been able to address some of the clear needs and the clear deficiencies that we knew this roster was going to have, and that Paul Mills was going to be tasked with fixing and bringing in you know, solutions for those issues. Yeah, we can say it looks like he's been able to do that. It looks like he's been able to do that. So it's just a cautious, like, moving forward of, I'm not going to get, like, way over the top and be like, this looks amazing and I'm so excited and team should win an American Conference championship. No. And, like, we have no clue on that. So I'm not even going to, you know, go there.
I'm kind of done with the predictive nature of this. There's no way. Like, this year will be worse than ever. Right. Like it's going to be worse than ever.
Finish in the conference. Is that what it'll be worse than ever as far as their results?
Trying to predict.
Okay. Okay.
Like,
gotcha.
It's never been more difficult.
Okay.
Right. Like every team is starting over almost, not like across the country. So that part of it's going to be hard. I just, all I really want to know on May 8th, And I want to get excited about players, too. Don't get me wrong. I want to be excited about these players and everything else. But all I really want to know on May 8th, as the administration is pinning open letters to the fan base if we need X amount of dollars, all I want to know is that Paul Mills is able to go into the portal, contact a player that he likes and identifies, and win that battle against at minimum right now, his peers, which would be other teams at the level of the American. That's all I want to know on May 8th of 2025. On May 8th of 2026, I'd love to know that they might identify a player that's being courted by a Big 12 team heavily, and they can win that battle because Wichita State basketball means something. And in 2027, a step for, you know what I mean? Like, I just want to know that as they just lost their two key players to the portal, who you know, before that, I would have said I'd like them to be able to keep those players as they're going to be heavily courted by bigger programs. And they were Mississippi State and is it Ole Miss? Ole Miss and Mississippi State? They weren't there, obviously. So now where are they? Like, where do they stand in the pantheon of college basketball today? That's what we're trying to know. It's almost impossible to know it. So as
I'm not sure that it's super realistic to be able to expect that consistently they're going to win recruiting battles against,
not right now,
against Big 12. Again, well, you mentioned Big 12, like against Big 12, SEC, Big 10 type schools consistently. Yeah, maybe every once in a while they're able to snag somebody. They're able to, and there are a caveat, like there are a ton of different reasons why that may happen. That may not even have anything to do with NIL dollars. It could be proximity. There could be somebody that wants to come play closer to home. Like maybe there's a connection with Paul Mills somewhere. Like I, you know, you never want to say never, but like I think that every once in a while, sure. Like if you really want to look at, you know, what the ceiling might be for that, yeah, maybe every once in a while they can win a recruiting battle against a top tier program in a different conference. But I don't think that's realistic to expect that all the time.
I don't expect it, but I think there's nothing wrong with desiring Wichita State to be able to compete with Memphis, with Creighton, with some of these other similarly placed schools that do a very good job and have no problem.
But
doing
to say on,
just,
and you just
now
said
they're
this,
not there.
You just said this, but to expect that on May 8th of 2026 that they win a recruiting battle against a Big 12 school for a player, I think is unrealistic.
It's unrealistic, but I don't think it's out of the world of possibility. If they have a really good year and get the fan base fired up, it could come at any point, right? Again, this is it's a great fan base. It's a great donor base. Maybe 2027. I don't care what it is. I just want them there whenever, as quickly as they can get there to be at that standing. They're not there now.
I mean, I think that the expectation, because, and this isn't like, you know, I'm not being Debbie Downer here at all. I just think that it's realistic to point out like, hey, it could very well be that Paul Mills has to turn over his roster every single year moving forward because that's just the state of college basketball and programs like Wichita State. Like, I think that, you know, to be able to say, hey, because they signed a good amount of guys on paper going into this upcoming season, all of a sudden they're going to start winning recruiting battles against Big 12 schools, I think is kind of laughable.
That's not what I'm saying at all. Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, coming up next hour. We've got all kinds of good stuff happening in the sports world. It's a busy time. It's hard to pick what you're going to watch each and every night. Each and every night, it's been fun to watch the Royals lately. 13 out of 15 games. Just keep on winning. Just keep on pitching like crazy. The run that the pitching staff is on right now is remarkable. It's as good a run as I can ever remember. And they had a great pitching staff a year ago. They finish up that series against the White Sox. They'll go for the four-game sweep. That's a 1:10 first pitch, by the way. And you will hear it here on KFH, 1 o'clock. Quick shout-out to Wichita State softball. They won the opening round. They play afternoon against North Texas. They play like 11 a.m. in the AAC tournament. But the Royals will play here on KFH. Excited to see if they can get that sweep. I hope they do now. It just like you feel greedy now. It's like, well, they got to finish the sweep today, right? Like it's the White Sox. They got to finish it up. But no, it's been pretty wild. And they've had, you know, a couple of games here lately where things are going their way. And that's a big part of doing something special like this. It's Bubic on the mound today, by the way, which you also feel very good about if you're a Royals fan.
Yeah, Michael Wacha pitched amazing last night. Bobby Wood Jr. hit goodness another home gracious run. You know, it was great. It was what we wanted to see from the Royals, at least what I wanted to see. And actually, with that win, that's 14 of 16. So, I mean, even better. Like, they've won 14 of their last 16 at this point. And so, you know, considering where they were when they started this stretch of baseball to where they are right now with the opportunity to get a sweep. And I know the schedule toughens up a little bit after this series wraps up. They've got the Red Sox and the Astros on the road and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it toughens up a little bit. You know,
yeah.
But they can absolutely, with the way that they've been playing and the way their pitchers have been throwing, they can absolutely continue this on.
You know, in June, they get Detroit, the Yankees, the A's, the Rangers, the Padres, the Dodgers are in June. Seattle starts July. They're about to hit another tough stretch, but it ain't yet. And so this is all timing out really well. Like, it's all like you, if you're the Royals and you're on a heater and you're playing these teams, like, this is good. Pile them up. Pile up the wins. We already talked about the Tigers and what they're doing. So, yeah, that's why we look at today against the White Sox. You're like, don't let your foot off the gas. Home games against Boston, Houston still struggle a little bit. St. Louis can't really score. So there's a lot there for the Royals to still go and attack here in this part of the schedule while get it while the getting's good, for lack of a better term. Bullpen last night, Estevez. He hasn't. Let me pull up his game log. Ursig's been. We'll call it what it is. Ursig's been much better than Estevez this year. Estevez has given up runs, though, about every eight appearances. Like, he's like a little bit shaky, and it was a shaky one last night, and it was starting to get a little butt pucker in there in the ninth. It was just like he didn't look like he could get anybody out. He did get the job done. I think that's important for a closer, but he's had to do that a few times here, but that's kind of his thing, Tommy. Like, he's not afraid of allowing a little traffic out there on the bases. He's done that from time to time this year.
You know, he's one of those closers, and there are quite a few that are like him, where if there's not a whole lot of drama, like, they'll manufacture some drama and, you know, make the high leverage situation even higher. And then for whatever reason, with the ice water running through the veins, able to still close it out. And there have been really, really good closers over the years that have been that way, where you know it's not going to always be clean, but they typically will get the job done. And, you know, until Estevez gets shaky to a point to where he's blowing saves, you kind of take the good with the bad a little bit, because he's still closing out games and it's not really cost the Royals up to this point.
Yeah, no, it's been fine. Like, he's... It's a weird dynamic. I don't know if you feel this way about it or not, but like, if I was power ranking right now the Royals relievers, he for sure wouldn't be one. I'm not sure he'd be two or even three, but I'm very comfortable with him in that spot because he's done it before, right? So it's like he's not been their best pitcher in the bullpen, but he's pitching in that coveted spot, and I'm okay with it. Like, I'm fine with it for now. He just, like, that of all the like, he just looks like he's never rattled out there, no matter what's happening. And there are nights where he's hittable. Last night was one of them. And he's able, for the most part, you know, whatever the percentage is, 11 out of 13 times this year, he's able to get the job done. And he did it again last night, despite three hits allowed in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I mean, his whip is high. I mean, it's over 1.2. But the ERA, you know, it's not like we're talking about, you know, him allowing a bunch of runs. Like, he's getting guys on base, he's allowing traffic, but they're not coming in to score. It's not really blowing games. And so, yeah, I mean, has Lucas Ursig been flat out nails? Absolutely. And he has really, you know, kind of solidified that eighth inning role, the setup guy for Estevez. And that's worked. That's been, you know, a really effective bridge to Estevez in the ninth inning. I mean, look, like I just mentioned, Estevez is going to allow runners. He's going to make it a little nerve-wracking at times. And it was not a clean outing by any means last night, for sure.
It was pretty bad. He was missing a lot.
But you know what? Like, he closed it out. And there wasn't a shutout at the end of the day. I think the thing about, like, Estevez, and it goes back to, you know, an often mentioned point with this team, is that can they score enough runs to be able to provide that support and a little bit of a cushion for guys like Estevez? And it was just enough for Estevez last night, but it was still enough. At the end of the day, it was still enough.
a big part, and you've pointed this out well, a big part of this streak, and well, the biggest difference, I think, between this streak and the bad streak is the teams they're playing. But the next biggest part is a point you brought up a lot. It's being able to get to that part of the bullpen with a lead, and that, and not having to hope that your offense can score late inning runs. If we look right now at the Royals relievers, Estevez, of the guys that are pitching frequently, is behind Urcig, Cruz, Lynch, and Schreiber in, and I agree, I think whip is very important for a relief pitcher, a late inning relief pitcher. He's behind all those guys. He's behind them in ERA. He's behind them in strikeout rate, I think, or right with them probably, but he's given up a lot more hits than any of those guys have. So like, those numbers are all there, but he still has that thing that none of them do, and that's experience in the spot. And I do think that matters a lot. Like, I don't care what these other guys are doing in the earlier innings. I don't think anybody wants to see John Schreiber, who's pitching really well right now, become the team's closer. Like, Estevez knows that spot. He knows what to do. Yes, it's a little shaky. And you know what? If it gets real shaky, they got lots of options down there. But to be able to say that, though, from where we were at this point last year with that bullpen, you remember that? How bad that was? It was like, are they ever going to hold a lead? Ever? It was bad, 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 bad. And they were still winning games despite it, right? They were just really bad at the back end of games. For them to be able to attack it the way they did at the deadline and then into this offseason to where we can now look at that bullpen and how many arms they have back there is a wild turnaround. Like, to one of the worst to one of the best, and it all happened since July. When did they start to make those trades? June, July, whenever June. It was,
yeah,
last year.
Yeah, into June.
I mean, goodness gracious, that is crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, and it from a personnel perspective, individually, I mean, remember it was James MacArthur. Like, he was the guy a season ago. And so, yeah, the question was, can anybody hold a lead for the Royals? But really, specifically, it was, can James MacArthur hold a lead for the Royals? And it was not good at this time last year. There were so many games where, you know, you felt like they had it, and then the bullpen blew the game. And it's been a complete 180 turnaround. They've been able to get out to leads and then hold those leads, and you know, due in large part to the fact that their rotation has been lights out. I mean, again, Michael Wacha, I don't think, at least for last night's game, is getting the credit he deserves. I mean, it was an absolute gem through seven innings for him. Shut out, seven innings, three hits, that was it. You know, and really held the White Sox lineup down for sure. And it allows you to shorten the game up. It allows you to not have to worry about bringing out three or four or five relievers in one game. It was two guys, and then it was just like a short little bridge right to the ninth inning. And, you know, Estevez was able to come in and close things out. So that can't be understated for sure. I mean, the fact that you're getting these kinds of outings night in and night out, again, yeah, teams that are not great. So that is true, but it's Major League Baseball. Any team can beat any team on any given night. And the fact that the rotation throughout this stretch has been so lights out, they've been able to work with the lead, turn it over to the bullpen, and the bullpen has been able to hold that lead, I mean, that's been invaluable.
It was Waka's best start of the year, for sure. His longest start of the year. And they don't have a day off this week. So that was, to your point, that's like, it is critical that he gets deep into a game. That's immensely impactful. Maybe they won't need the back end today. Jason brought this up a while ago. Jason, sorry, it's taking some time to get to it. Don't mind too much that the Royals aren't scoring a ton, but I am a little nervous that they aren't at least putting more pressure on the other teams offensively. Obviously, people that listen to the show know I agree with you on that, Jason. It's not a problem now, but it's a problem I do think that they'll have to address at the deadline. And it, you know, right now, is the pitching going to hold up to this pace? Probably not, because they won't be playing some of these teams, but they just need to be consistent. And I think that they will be. I also think the difference a little bit right now between now and when they were playing in the bad streak, because they haven't really scored runs at any point this year. That's not changing probably until something happens with the roster that will come down the road. one of the big differences to the what we were just talking about, the bullpen has really settled into roles now that they weren't in. How many of those games did Zerpa cost him? You know what I mean? Like, so I think if you took like the now more defined bullpen roles and guys in their comfort spots and picked that up and placed it in that earlier part of the season, they wouldn't have all been losses. And so I think, look, the offense is a problem right now, but it's not a bad enough problem that they're not winning games, and they're not going to, like, there's nothing to do about it. Like, they're just, it's going to be the offense until they get to the point where they're able to make a move.
Until they get to the point to where they start losing games because of their offense.
Right. And I hate to think about it that way, because that just makes me think about the daunting schedule of June. Like, I hope before that part of the schedule comes that you'll see more progress from some of the bats that are currently in the lineup. I don't think that's the end game, where I thought maybe a month ago that could be the end game, is just everyone needs to kind of start doing what they... I don't know that I'm there anymore. Like, I don't know that everyone doing what they're supposed to is going to be enough, but it might be enough. It'll be enough right now because they still play a softer schedule. But my whole point with all of it all week has been, I don't think that's going to be enough for October. And so they've got to make that move. We'll come back. We'll get into it a little bit more in hour number two. Tim Fitzgerald in hour number two. We got a giveaway for you. Stick around. More Sports Daily right after this.
Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is another hour of Sports Daily. Let's kick it off with an HTO giveaway. If you want to win some free iced tea, you can do that right now. Just text the keyword tea to 20357. We got some sun shining. Never a better time to try some HTO iced tea. Whether you're a first timer or a longtime fan, you can get a free cup on us at either East or West Wichita or in Derby. That's T20357. Good luck, everybody. One entry per day, message and data rates apply. Welcome back into Sports Daily. We were talking Royals there. We can finish up with the Royals and then we'll move on to maybe some NBA playoffs. We've got Tim Fitzgerald coming up in this hour. If you want to get back to our shocker conversation that we had about the new recruit, you can go back and listen to that on the Odyssey app. So, Tommy, as we look at it, it's Bubich today. They don't get a day off until the 15th. So it's not until this time next week, until next Thursday, that they get a day off. It's a good point about Waka's depth into that game, because now it leaves all those other relievers we talked about fresh for this one. You know, Bubich does have the ability. Let me go look at Bubich's. Let's look at Bubich's game log here. What's the deepest he's gone this year? Because he's got the conversion, of course, from being a reliever. He has given them seven one time. He's pitched completed five innings every start this year. He's completed six innings three times. And then he's got a seven-inning start. So he's capable of doing the same thing against this offense. He has been lights out this year, been one of my favorite, if not my favorite, stories for the Royals this year. And he goes up against the White Sox in some afternoon baseball to try and complete a sweep. I mean, I think that's where we start. I mean, why wouldn't we? The pitching has been outstanding, and we'll see if Bubich can keep the train rolling.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they don't get any days off coming up soon, I mean, being able to lean on your starters to go deep into games and like what Waka did last night, I do think is important for Kansas City to continue on and do what they're doing. I mean, you know, I would imagine that once we start to get, if we ever got into a situation where during a stretch of baseball where there aren't a whole lot of days off and the starters are not able to go deep into ball games, they get beat up on early or whatever, and you start leaning on your bullpen a whole lot more, that's maybe when things go off the rails a little bit, and you then need to rely on the bats to get going to try to get back into ball games. But that's not really been the recipe. That's not what we've seen lately from Kansas City at all. And so if they're able to get another quality start from Chris Bubich, and I'm not even suggesting that he goes seven. If he goes six, if he maybe if he even goes five or into the sixth inning, at that point, I do feel like you've got a strong enough bullpen, especially with the lead, to be able to keep you in it.
I've tried to think a lot as we've discussed the offense a lot this year. Like teams historically who have, I don't expect the Royals to be near the bottom of baseball offensively like they are now. I think internally they'll get better than that. But I'm trying to like remember back to really good teams that really struggled offensively. I want to say there was a Rays team or two over the years that fit that profile. And I want to say in those early Bruce Bochy Giants years, there were probably some teams that fit that profile a little bit. So there's a path there. It's just like, it's a really weird thing to see it because I don't believe what I'm seeing offensively. Like, I don't believe that that's what it is. Like, I don't believe what we're seeing is the true potential of the offense. And so while they're playing the softer part of the schedule and they're pitching like this, it doesn't really matter. And that's okay. Like, that's fine. It's really like, what are we looking at? What is the problem? And even as some of these guys, Tommy, are starting to hit more, they're still struggling to score runs. It's really strange. We knew they weren't going to have any power. We could look at this roster before the year and say, yeah, that's not going to be a team because of the ballpark they play in, because of the number of hitters that they will put in the lineup that just flat are not power hitters. Like, they're never going to be a power team. That's not going to be their game, and that's fine. I don't think they should ever build that way. The greatest Royals teams we've seen in this generation were not power teams, right? Like, that, not playing at Kauffman Stadium. So as they have, like, Kyle Isbell's heating up. We talked about Drew Waters. Michael Garcia's hitting. Bobby Witt Jr.'s hitting. Michael Massey's starting to get some hits. Like, all these guys are doing, but they're still not leading to any runs. And I'm like, what is it? Like, what would be the catalyst for this team to just open up offensively? And I can't figure out what it is. And as they go and try to identify players, like, what would be the thing? Clearly their deficiency is power, but I don't know that that's going to solve things for a guy that hits a home run a week or whatever, maybe two. That doesn't fix your overall issue. I can't quite figure out what it is right now.
I think some of it is that, you know, especially last night, some of the hits that they got were two out hits. And so they're getting runners on base but they're not in great positions to be able to drive those runners in. That's not always the case, but I feel like we've seen that more often than not when, you know, it's not like a lot of times they're getting a lot of traffic on with no outs or one out or whatever. And so a lot of two out hits, getting on base, not opening up a ton more opportunities to be able to drive those runs in. And so I do think that that's part of it for sure. But yeah, I mean, there's just kind of been a lack. And it's been one of the, I guess, negative things about this team is that it's not a lack of getting on base. I mean, they had 10 hits last night. It's the matter of getting those runs across the board. That's always been the challenge.
And taking advantage of it. Yeah, and that was something they were really good at last year. We mentioned Salvi and Vinny, and it really could be as simple as those two, which I think it might be. Like, those two were RBI machines a year ago, and they're just not this year. But I think that's also unfair to them individually to have that. I mean, it's not, because they're hitting in the middle of the lineup, and Salvador Perez is a future Hall of Famer, and Vinny Pasquantino is expected to be that. So maybe it's the wrong thing for me to say it's unfair. We've seen Salvi pick it up, and it still is like, overall, we'll see. It's not, again, it like I foresee it being a problem like, I don't know, May 19th when they have to hit the road and go to San Francisco and then Minnesota, and then they've got Cincinnati and Detroit. Like, that's where – so what does that give them? With Boston, Houston, St. Louis coming up, gives them another couple of weeks to try and figure this out and get you closer. We'll see. Again, none of it matters if they pitch like this.
And by the way, like, Vinny's on
like this the rest of the way. It doesn't matter.
Vinny's on a little bit of a heater right now. I mean, he's got his average up to 210. You know, he's not lighting the world on fire, like from an overall average standpoint. But over the last couple of weeks, you know, he's hitting. He didn't have any RBIs last night, didn't drive anybody in, but he was 2-for-4. So he's got that average up over 200. And, you know, if he can continue on that path, is Vinny ever going to be a hit for average kind of guy like we see from Bobby Witt Jr. or Mikel Garcia? Probably not. But he can definitely get back up into the respectable range for sure. And that's kind of what you look for from him.
His 3-year average is 270, 268. I mean, if he gets back to that, they're cooking. Right. Like they're going to be just fine. His OPS is over his career, a little over league average. But like they'll take that. They'll just take him being what he is. And we'll see if he gets back there. I think he will. That average lift, his floor, Tommy, the worst of it, once we kind of got into it, was at the end of April, it was down at 174. And that's how much it's cut. And it's at 210 after yesterday. That's a pretty good jump over, you know, a little more than a week. So another jump or two like that, and we'll see. I've told you this too. I also think he's hitting the ball hard and has been. Like he's been making good contact. Maybe there's a little bad luck in there. But again, if your starters are going to give you the kind of pitching they've had and you've got the kind of bullpen they have, they'll be okay for a while. They'll be okay at least for the next few weeks, probably. And maybe they'll just win them all like they're doing right now, 14 out of 16. That is crazy. And the reason I keep saying 15 is because this is the game technically that we circled when things were bad, 16 games, right? This is the 16th game. This is the end of it.
They got Remember the finale on that road trip. Yeah, five. They won the last game on that road trip to at least salvage 2-8 before they got in to this 16-game stretch.
So we were like, oh, man, 11-5, they'd be right over 500. So how does 14-2 sound to that? That's just crazy. What a stretch. The Royals play right here on KFH, 1 o'clock today. You'll hear it. That coverage begins. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about it all. You can also listen, by the way, at Odyssey.com. You can go to the Odyssey app if you are at work in the middle of the day. Probably a pretty good way to listen to the Royals. Just throw the earbud in and you're hard working and listening to the Royals with us here on KFH. All right. When we come back, it was another good night of NBA playoffs. Are the Knicks going to do this thing? They get another wild win? I mean, I think the Celtics are better on paper. Can they dig out of an 0-2 hole, though? I don't know. Going back to New York? We'll get into that one. The Thunder bounce back in a huge way. And I got to ask Max if our Winnipeg Jets are okay for the bet. So we'll do all that. We got Tim Fitzgerald later this hour as well. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Good morning, Jacob and Tommy. This is Kevin calling about the Royals. I'm curious what your thought is on how the Royals deal with having four first basemen, possible first basemen, on the roster when Jack gets called up, with Mark Canha, Vinny, Salvi, and Jack all able to play the position. Would a trade for an outfield piece be possible at that point? Just curious for your thoughts. Thank you.
Love that, Kevin. That's coming in from the Odyssey app where you can leave voice messages. Appreciate that. It's the elephant in the room, I think, organizationally, Kevin. Honestly, I would imagine it's an uncomfortable topic. When a guy like Jack Caglione's available to you in the draft, you take him, right? You just take him. You just, like, the thought to me of Major League Baseball teams drafting players based on the positions they need on the big league roster would be a fool's errand. There are teams that have done that. It's so hard to get graduated to the big league level, let alone be good. If you've got good players, you just take them. But now you have this situation. Jack, I wonder, Tommy, if the Royals were deficient at first base, like if they had a big hole, do you think Caglione would be in the big leagues yet? Because I think he might be. I mean, I think that's a part of the reason he's not called up yet. It's not the biggest reason, but I think it's probably part of the reason. But it's something they're going to have to work through as an organization. And it's not just, to Kevin's point, there's four guys that can play it. It's not just that. Canha's fine. Canha can play the outfield. Canha can do something else. The problem is you have two guys who kind of have to play there. In Vinny Pasquantino, we think, I don't know that he's ever played another position, but Salvador Perez, who's a catcher, needs time there. He can also DH for you, right? And so could Vinny in theory, and so could Cap. But you have three guys for two spots. I think Canha, I'm not worried about Canha. You got three guys for two spots. And it's not just three guys. You've got one future Hall of Famer, one all-star caliber first baseman when he's right, and one of the top prospects in baseball who's tearing the cover off the ball in the minor leagues. That's why, Kevin, honestly, for me, I've been so frustrated that they won't play Caglione a little bit more in a corner outfield spot to see if he can do it down there. But it's one organizationally, Tommy, it's got to be uncomfortable.
It sure seems to me that there are two paths that they can go down. Number one is what you just mentioned, try to develop Jack Caglione as an outfielder. And then at that point, you've kind of solved a couple of different issues there because their outfielders, at least offensively, are not very good. And then on top of that, you're finding an everyday playing position for Jack Caglione, who is everybody's favorite prospect right now for good reason. And so that's one path for sure, but that's not an overnight thing. And I do think that, you know, if he can play the outfield, that's a much slower process to get him up to the bigs. I just imagine the logjam and the complications that would come into play as you're trying to figure out if you're giving everybody enough playing time, where they're playing, I just think that that's kind of a game of chess, and it's really difficult to do, and it'd be a challenge for Matt Cutrero to accomplish. The other path, the other scenario, is I kind of think the odd man out's probably Vinny Pasquantino, and I love Vinny Pasquantino, but if push comes to shove, like, what happens if Jack Caglione can't play the outfield? What if they're just like, look, he's not developing at a corner outfield spot. We don't feel like defensively it's more of a liability than it is a benefit to have him out there. But we absolutely have to have his bat. We absolutely want him on the roster. You're not moving Salvador Perez. He's your captain. He's your future Hall of Famer. He's all of that. And he can catch. And he can DH.
Yeah.
Vinny Pasquantino can play first base. Like, that's it. He's a first baseman, and you know, he can DH as well. But, I mean, it's hard for me to think that the odd man out's not Vinny Pasquantino if worst-case scenario happens. And I think that we're a long way from that. But it is one thing that's been in the back of my mind for quite a while.
It's been in my mind since last year. I don't like that it's in my mind. Vinny Pasquantino is very much a heart and soul of this team player. I don't like that it's in my mind, but it's been in my mind for a long time, because he's a non-power hitting first baseman. It's hard to not have power come from that position. It can be done. It's not the end of the world. But when the power is staring at you in the face, it's hard. Here's what I wouldn't advocate for. I wouldn't advocate to trade Vinny Pasquantino. So don't misunderstand any of this. My preferred course of action is to put Cags in a corner spot in the outfield and kick the can down the road and just see what happens. Maybe he's really good at it, right? Like, what I don't want to do is pretend like a young, talented baseball player is incapable of playing multiple positions.
Well, we don't know that. And he's not played.
Right. We don't know that he can, but we don't know that he can't either. So that's like, to me, it's like, why aren't you, like, he's in AA. You're worried about his bat. You're not worried about his defensive development.
But don't you think that if they were more confident in his abilities to play a corner outfield spot, that maybe he would be doing it? Like, maybe they're telling us something without actually telling us something.
And that takes us to my less preferred path, which is moving a guy like Vinny Pasquantino. I don't think,
like, it's really easy to be, you know, and we've both done this. It's really easy to say, just play him in the outfield. Why isn't he playing? Like, they might be telling us something without actually telling us something.
Yeah, if he can't do it, he can't do it. I think the point is, though, he's in AA, let him try. And the only reason I say it is because almost everybody on this team, with the exception of Vinny Pasquantino, do a little mental exercise here. I believe everybody on the team, with the exception of Vinny Pasquantino, has or can play multiple positions, right? Am I missing anybody? There's not another player on the roster that has not played another position at some point in time over the course of their career. He's the only one.
I mean, Freddie Fermin is primarily a catcher, right? Like, does Freddie Fermin play anywhere else? He's pretty much a catcher.
He's played first base. Okay. I think so. I'm pretty sure he has. So, like, everybody else does it. In the whole organization, it feels like, Vinny's physically not capable of it, but I think because of his body type as much as anything else, but he's the only one. And so it's not, and maybe, right, I'm not like throwing stones at the Royals for not playing Cags in the outfield, especially if they don't think he can. But that creates this problem here. But it's a good problem. Problem is not the right word. It creates this situation. It's not a problem to have too many great players at a position. That's not a problem. It's a situation. It's a situation. So Vinny's contract, it's not like he's on some expiring contract either, right? Like he's not. He's got a ton of value to the organization. He's not a free agent, Tommy, until 2029. CAG's clock hasn't even started ticking yet. Salvi, is there anybody that doesn't think Salvi has at least like two, three really productive years left? Like, it's not something that's going away quickly. So I don't know that there is another solution other than making a trade than Jack Caglione being capable of playing a corner outfield spot.
That's the only other thing I can think of is going back to Salvador Perez and saying, hey, man, we know you're getting older. You're going to have to be just a catcher. Like, we can't have you play first base. We can't have you. I mean, maybe every once in a while you can DH, but you're going to be a catcher. And then at that point, when you're catching, then Vinny is, you know, DHing and Jack Caglione's playing first base. And then and then Mark Canna can play the outfield when he needs to. Like, yeah, that's about the only other path that I can see. The only issue with that is Salvador Perez is no spring chicken, and having him.
I think Salvador Perez would love that scenario. Well, I think he'd love to catch every day.
I mean, they protect him. You know, they protect his health and his longevity by not having him do that. And so that would be the only other path. And then you would have Vinny be your primary DH and let Jack play in the field as your first baseman. Then you've got, you know, Salvi catching, and when he can't catch, he either DHs or he gets a day off. But at that point, I don't think you can put Salvi at first base, because then again, you've got three guys that can play first base, and you've got to try to, you know, at least clear the lane for Caglione to be your starting first baseman.
So I'm trying to think of really good, like, comps to guys who are first basemen, like who are just like, you just look at them and you're like, oh yeah, that's a first baseman, but who have also over the course of their career played the outfield, who have been such good bats that it was like, just find them a spot, right? Carlos Lee keeps jumping to mind. You remember Carlos Lee, El Caballo, the big burly first baseman, he played for the Astros and the Brewers forever. They stuck him out and left pretty frequently. This is a different sort of example. Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper was an outfielder that has converted to a first baseman. How about Salvador Perez, a catcher that they're just like, you know what? We don't want you to catch every day. Go play first base. Like, that's what I guess that for me is where, like, it is really, really hard for me to believe that Jack Caglione could possibly be that bad in the outfield. He's never really played out there. But I've looked at much less athletic, much less, you know, speed, just the ability to run after a ball, which Cags has some speed. He's huge, by the way. I don't know if people have actually watched him. He's a monster. But there are so many examples of lesser athletes doing this thing that I cannot imagine he's that bad.
But keep in mind, if you go all the way back to his college career, he didn't play in the field at all. He was a starting pitcher and a DH.
Right. Yeah.
So like you can't even have a comp going back to his college days of his prowess in the field, because he didn't have any. Like, that wasn't the role that he played. He was pitching and he was hitting. That's all he was doing on that team. Like, defensive abilities out in the field was not part of his game very much at all in college. And so that makes it even more difficult, because you have nothing you can even look back on in his college career and say, oh yeah, like, he can do that.
I wonder if Vinny could play left field. Like, honestly, it's funny. We think of Vinny and his body type. You know what's crazy? I just looked at this. Vinny's huge, right? He's like, he's listed at 6'3", 245. Cags is bigger. He's 6'5", 250. He'll step on the field and be one of the largest baseball players in baseball. Like, he is a monster. Maybe it's worth, as you're looking to possible solutions without having to trade somebody, because I don't think anybody wants to do that, maybe it's worth seeing if Vinny could play a little left field or right field in a game. You're late in a game. I mean, this sounds crazy, but I don't think it's that crazy. If they could ever get up on a team like 8-0, let's say you're up 8-0 and it's the back end, like, throw him on left. Hey, Vinny, let's, you know, take batting practice out there. Can you track down a fly ball? It's a spacious outfield. I get it. Maybe you don't do it at Kauffman Stadium. Maybe you only do it in smaller ballparks. I mean, I just like get creative, because the greatest need for this team right now is very clearly the thing that Jack Caglione is doing very well. Like it's an obvious fit and need on the roster, but it is like this logjam. Good problem to have. I can tell you this, Vinny Pasquantino would be coveted on the market, but if you want to start getting real crazy and thinking about potentially trading a player like Jack Caglione, which I feel like is almost next to impossible, you'd have to the trade asset that would come back on something like that. You're talking about like a perennial all-star outfielder that's playing for a bad team right now, or a team that's needing to move. I don't know that player exists. Like, who would that player even be at this point? I don't know who it would be, but it would have to be for a deal like that, like a controllable all-star caliber outfielder. If you were going to move a guy like Caglione, his controllability, his raw power, the production he's showing at this point in the minor leagues. And even if you win that trade and he reaches his upside, you'll probably regret it forever. It's not quite the equivalent of trading Bobby Witt Jr. It's not there. He's not that prospect. Bobby Witt Jr. was one of the great prospects of all time. He's not that, but he's pretty close to it right now. Like he couldn't be doing better in reality. So I love that question, Kevin. It's one we wonder about all the time. And it brings up the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is, could they ever trade Vinny Pasquantino? Was it last year, Tommy? There were real rumors around that, weren't there? That wasn't just us wondering. Like, weren't there real... I think there was some substance to that, if I remember.
I don't remember if there was or not. I mean, I know that there had been a little bit of, speculation that maybe that could be a target. But I don't know if that was ever a legitimate real thing.
The only reason I think it was is because it was right before he really turned it on and was like leading the league in RBIs before his injury. And we were like, man, good thing they didn't do something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully he just starts hitting and then you can take your time with Cags. I mean, they can obviously take their time now because they've won 13 out of their last 15 games. Real quick, Tommy, a couple of minutes here. The Thunder last night, there's not a lot to say about that game. Revenge game a little bit. That was certainly something. 149-106. Knicks Celtics, I think, is where the attention will lie today, though. As the Celtics, the defending champs, fall down 0-2. They didn't take as many threes. They cut their, the amount down by a pretty significant number, but they still didn't make any of them. And it's killing them right now. Live and die by the three.
You know what's killing them is the fact that they have led in both of these games, the majority of the games, and they haven't been able to win either one of them. And the Knicks have been able to come from behind and in both of the games and be clutch. That's what the Knicks did in the previous series. That's what they've done so far in this series with the Celtics, is the clutch shots, the comeback mentality, and all of a sudden Boston, who looked like a team that could repeat and have the talent to do that, they find themselves down 0-2, and really it's of their own doing. It's of their own making. And I know give the Knicks a ton of credit for their clutch shots, but the Celtics should have won both of those games. They led the majority of them, and they weren't able to get either one of them done.
Yeah, it's I still like who are you picking in this series? Like even down 0-2, are you picking the Knicks?
Oh no, I'm picking the Knicks.
I sure hope so. I sure hope so. They deserve it. And people like to pile on New York sports fans. I get it. But when you think about like the Knicks, the Jets, like what if you were a Knicks fan, a Jets fan, and a Mets fan? Like there are plenty of suffering fans in New York. There are. I think playing at the Garden, I think the Knicks are cool. I got no issue with the Knicks. I think they're cool, and I hope they're able to get it done. They're up 0-2, or up 2-0 going back home. Man, that'll be fun. Against that team, too, that city's going to go up in flames. They're going to be so excited, and then they'll probably lose to the Pacers in the next round or something. I don't know if you're Cleveland, but it's good to see it. And how do you not love Jalen Brunson? The Thunder, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I don't think Denver cares. Denver got it back home, split. They won on the road. What do you think about that series overall?
The Thunder showed why they should be a team to be reckoned with, at least in the Western Conference for sure. I thought it was surprising that they fell down one game to none. They had to have this game and even the series last night, and they knew that. Like, it was a, I think you called it a revenge game earlier. Like, it absolutely was that. They flexed a little bit on Denver, and you know, at this point, I feel like that's probably going to continue. I still really like the Thunder. I still really feel like they're the team that, you know, they're my pick to go all the way.
I don't have a pick to go all the way. I don't know enough, but yeah, I think that was an impressive enough win to swing that back, even with the split going back home. Rick, real quick on our conversation about the first base for the Royals, he said it's going to be tough adjusting to major league pitching alone, yet alone learning a new position. I don't know that, Rick, anybody's advocating for the first time Caglione sees outfield time is at the big league level. He's in double A right now. Now's the time if you're going to do it. Not once he gets called up. Like, you got to find out if he can do it. You don't learn on the fly in the big leagues.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, joining us now on the program, our buddy Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, always locked in to everything happening with K-State Athletics. Fitz, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you boys?
We're good. You know, we're just entering and chugging along in the transfer portal season, trying to cipher through these court cases and all of the things. You chimed in on or at least retweeted something. Nick Saban is making a little noise, I think, trying to get into the president's ear, it sounds like, about maybe some possible solutions. I guess I would just start with, do you, and I don't have a real strong opinion about this. Do you think Nick Saban's a good voice to find solutions in all this? Is he with the times enough, or is he too old man on the porch?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. I'll be honest. Nick Saban surprised me a little bit in the way he speaks about things now post coaching. He seems to present himself as someone who wants to be a steward of the game. At least, you know, some of the comments, you know, about the amount of money being spent in college sports. And I'm like, well, yeah, Alabama did a lot of that. And, Jacob, I think we've come to the point now where there's going to be a resolution, of some sort. And here's why. If you saw the $40 million club put out by Indiana coach Kurt Cignetti, it's showing what football programs are spending around $40 million to build their rosters this year, which is absolutely absurd. There's no longstanding SEC teams. Texas is the only SEC team in there, along with Texas Tech, which is the problem, is they've intruded on the wealthy club, and that's upset some people. But without any SEC teams, now all of a sudden the SEC's like, hold on, if this turns into wealth-based and not just revenue-based, a program like SMU can outspend SEC programs. And now it's a problem. See, that's what bothers me. It's not a problem until the SEC isn't at an advantage. But we all know college sports is a mess. And if they want to form a presidential commission on this, let's see what they come up with. Because this whole system's so broken, we need a new system. This system can't be resolved. You can't patchwork this one back together. It has been destroyed by the courts and, honestly, by the way the NCAA has handled this. So we need to go back to the table, probably with the assistance of Congress to set some things up, if you can get Congress to do anything, and then proceed from there. But I'm hopeful. But back to your question, I don't know what to think of Nick Saban. He has represented the uber wealthy of college sports, basically, for most of his career.
You know, it's certainly, you know, if you want something fixed, going to the government to get it fixed doesn't usually seem like a great idea. But, I mean, hey, at this point, it is what it is. You know, the NCAA has proven themselves to be, over the years, an extremely effective lobbyer. Like, that's what they do. They're great at that. And, you know, basically being a roadblock for any kind of meaningful progress and moving things forward. I mean, the NCAA as a entity has been drug along kicking and screaming and has fought this every step along the way. It's hard for me to think that even with the presidential commission and even with Nick Saban co-chairing it and all of that, It's hard for me to think that the NCAA is going to go along with really anything that that even remotely threatens to upend their power in the way that they have been ruling for decades.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's basically going to take a full-on rebellion from membership, particularly Division One, because this doesn't affect Two and Three nearly as much. And Division One's going to need to assert itself with seeking changes or departing the NCAA. And I think only that threat will get reform. I mean, in an ideal world, you go in and remake the NCAA into what it needs to be. As you mentioned, the NCAA never seems to recognize that it's part of the problem. Even as the courts rule this stuff, even as fans and coaches have said it for years, the NCAA thinks, you know, it's the gatekeeper of purity for college athletics, when in reality they've been a big cause of this because of their inequitable application of the rules so often. And now just kind of sitting out decisions they don't like from the courts and just not reacting to it and letting things spin wildly out of control. That's not what leadership's about.
Well, listen, it'd be cannibalism to tell the NCAA to, you know, get rid of itself. It's not going to... Mm-hmm. It's not... I think maybe I'm in the minority. I think the NCAA can still have a role in college athletics. It's just different. Like, we do need an organizing body for all the tournaments and all the different things that have to happen. It can still play an important role. I just, like, the idea that one set of rules should be the same for the very obviously uneven playing field that, by the way, has always existed in college sports. It's yep. now just more front and center than ever before. Like, that idea that one group can govern all of that, that's what doesn't make sense. The solution has to be the conferences. Like, I don't want the other solution, which is another organization to start that only features some schools and not the others, right? So to me, it's pretty easy. Just like the conferences, you govern within a set of rules in the conference.
I would agree. Yeah. I mean, I think the conferences are going to have to take control of this. And, you know, if anything, within the NCAA, I think the Division I has an argument to break free, because Division II and III gets to vote on a lot of their stuff. And they're like, why? This doesn't affect them. And they have way more votes. It doesn't make sense. I think Division I probably wants to have complete control of his existence and try to set out rules that work for it. And if the NCAA won't do that, then you will see rebellion. But if they kind of get on board with reform, instead of just talking about it, actually thinking of ways to reinvent itself, then I think it could survive.
Let's talk a little bit about K-State basketball. Fitz came down a few days ago that Jerome Tang has a new member of his coaching staff. Bill Peterson comes in as an assistant coach, and he's coached with Jerome Tang before at Baylor. He was in a support staff role there, but he's been at a bunch of different levels of basketball for a long time, has worked with a lot of really notable NBA players as well. What does Bill Peterson bring to Jerome Tang and to the staff?
Experience and knowledge. You know, if there's been a knock against this coaching staff is they didn't come in with enough knowledge as head coaches and, you know, schematics and those type of things. They were trying to do it as a group think, and it just hasn't worked. And I think going out and, you know, hiring a veteran, you know, an old fart that's been around the block, I think, if you want to call mid-60s that, but that's exactly what they brought to the table, as someone who's seen a lot of basketball, coached a lot of basketball as a head coach at times, has worked with players at all levels. And I think this is a really important step for the program, maybe to begin to carve out its total identity of who it is and what kind of players it wants and what style of play it takes to the court. And hopefully that this coach can help form that for Jerome Tang.
Do we know anything else? Have you guys dug anything else up, had a chance to find anything else about the Serbian superstar coming in?
Well, you know, any time nowadays when you're going over to Europe and getting into these clubs and trying to find a player, you have to buy out a contract. These are, you know, even though they're the equivalent of college-level play over there, these are clubs that are paying, so these players are under contract. So it gets a little more complicated. You got to entice the player to come and entice the club to release them from the contract. And I think that's kind of where it's at right now in those negotiations.
All right, Fitz, what do you guys have going for us at Go Power Cat? What else is cooking there?
Well, we did a lot of discussion on the loss of Tremaine Carroll, the strength and conditioning director for football, and how that might impact. And we'll continue to look at that because his departure to USC kind of came out of left field, and it was an internal promotion at K-State. And we'll explore that some more. But the guys are working on a podcast, and just same old for the month of May.
All right. Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. Hope all is well in this calm before the storm here pretty quick.
Good to hear from you, boys.
There goes Fitz. Appreciate it. If you missed anything with Fitz there, you can go back. Always love picking Fitz's brain about the happenings of bigger picture college athletics. He's been a longtime representative of schools that aren't quite up there financially with the mega powers, but who still deserve a place at the table, like K-State. And I think that perspective is always good as we, Tommy, get into these larger scale discussions about what should be happening. I can't decide if I think Nick Saban being at the charge of the changes for college sports is a good thing or not. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I don't know.
I mean, Nick Saban historically has been on the side of the fence of players should not be compensated. Like that's been
not like they are now.
Well, I mean, he's been from an abolitionist point of view as far as NIL and the money being made and all of that should not exist. Amateurism, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I mean, that'll be interesting, to see how he. How he fits into this commission. The one thing I always go back to, generally speaking, in my life and just about every area of my life, whenever I hear like the whole, the knock on the door and, hey, we're the government, we're here to help. I'm always I'm good. I'll pass.
That's Paul Savage's favorite analogy.
Yeah, and so I've always like been in that world just in anything in my life. And so if college sports cannot fix itself and they have to turn things over to the government to fix it for them, it must be in really, really bad shape.
Well, the problem they're facing is the legal problems. Like they need laws in place to help guide them to the end. I think that's the challenge. I don't know that college wants to involve the government because I don't think you mentioned they're a lobbying arm, the NCAA. They're not going to like what politicians can pull from popularity out of this. They're not going to like it. That's not going to be good for them. So it's hard. Now you're seeing, though, and maybe this is – I never give the NCAA credit for patience. This could be a place where patience is going to pay off for them a little bit because there isn't anybody that loves what's happening in the transfer portal right now. Nobody does, right? Coaches don't. I mean, players do, probably to some degree because they're getting paid through it, but like fans don't, coaches don't, kids are getting lied to. It's not, it's just like, it's weird and kind of yuck and all that kind of stuff. This is the first year we've seen that. So maybe it'll help build momentum to more legislation to be more restrictive. Could be. I mean, it's possible. It's possible, certainly, but we're a long way from it still. I don't know how long. Nobody does. Who knows? But Saban's in the president's ear. I don't know. I mean, that could be a wild development in all of this.
All right, busy show today. Our thanks to Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, talking all things Kansas State and college athletics. If you missed any of that interview, go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app. Coming up today, a couple of hours of Rich Eisen until we've got Royals Day Baseball, the finale of their series against the White Sox, going for the sweep against Chicago. For Jacob Albrecht, I'm Tommy Caster. See you tomorrow.